might be implemented, it'd be sending a nice signal to the American public. We could all save energy and save money at the same time and maybe get a job done. Well, it didn't quite turn out that way. We've got our bunch of voluntary standards that says it'll be a very lovely idea if utility commissions will consider these tenets or voluntary goals when they're establishing rates. And so we lost the war on that effort. Now, I sort of stepped into that to suggest to you that some of that is happening at the state and local level, to the extent that you've got a municipally owned utility, then as citizens groups, you could lobby, if you will, testify or intervene in the hearing to force those rates to be considered, and the government will be on the other side also intervening and pushing their voluntary standards. It's sort of been a stream of consciousness, but that was a way to deal with one of the problems. Now, I want to touch on industry just a bit and the use of petroleum and gas products and industry processes. The answer for the short term in energy with diminishing petroleum and natural gas supplies here in the United States is going to have to be, if you will, a movement to coal, nuclear, or alternative solar-assisted or geothermal energy. Another portion of the National Energy Plan was a mandate that would force large industrial users of natural gas and petroleum to discontinue using those products under their boilers that are used in manufacturing processes, and also utilities, and force them on to coal to the extent that the use of coal could be accomplished and at the same time keep within environmental quality laws both at the federal and local level. Well, we started off with a really hefty bill that pulled in most of the major manufacturers using large amounts of natural gas and petroleum products, and generally most of the utilities. The conference on that portion of the bill was finished last week, and what we got was less than the whole loaf. The target of opportunity for industry has been reduced from the bill that the president and the what was in the FEA went into the conference with, and has now been reduced by 50%. Utilities, the same thing, and with the manufacturers who are using petroleum products and natural gas, there are so many exclusions to that law that if they're using certain types of boilers, which may or may not be economically feasible to convert to coal, then they too are excused from that forced or mandatory conversion. The point I make in all of this is that what I think we're going to get off the hill, hopefully just before Christmas, we're thinking now Christmas Eve night, is going to be the beginning of an energy plan which just starts to address some of the questions you raised about alternative energy sources, the final question of where we go with coal and with nuclear. And we'll be discussing these issues for the next 5 or 10 years if we have the time to play with it. And remember, I talked about falling over the brink. The one message I'd leave you with through all of this convoluted conversation has to do with the fact that big industry and big business knows and understands each piece of legislation. I'm not asking you to support any piece of a bill, just whichever piece makes more sense to you and drives home the point you make, either in terms of economics or the morality of nuclear versus some other kind of energy source. That message has got to be heard on the Hill, and too, by this administration and any other, than by more than a handful of people who amount to be 5 or 10. I know. Yes, ma'am. Two things coming up, and that actually the conservation, the household conservation portion of that bill was perhaps the least controversial portion of the National Energy Act, and the conference too has voted on that portion of the bill. There will be tax credits to homeowners and small businessmen who either choose to only insulate or refit their current furnaces, add storm windows, heat pumps, up to 20% of the cost of the investment for solar-assisted and wind-assisted auxiliary heating sources. The tax credit will be 30%. As I indicated, that really did sail through the conference, and as soon as we get a vote, you'll see that tax relief, and it is also, I might add, retroactive to April the 20th. So should you decide today, or if you decided on April the 21st, you've got your investment covered up to 20% for the traditional retrofit devices that we all know about, and up to 30% for solar heated and the use of more renewable energy resource measures. Yes. Sort of fluffed over the program for voluntary energy efficiency.
And let's see, how do we start?
And let's see, how do we start? The furnace, the heating and the cooling, of course, is the most energy consuming of the appliances in your home. Then we drop down to refrigerator. I should do better at this. I don't work this job anymore, though. Then comes the electric or gas stove, and they rank just about as you would expect them to in terms of size and voltage. Oh, no, a toaster oven. Well, see, the problem is, though, you've got to quantify that over the use of the appliance. Your refrigerator is a real energy glutton because there it is running all day. Your toaster oven, which, by the way, makes a lot more sense to use than your oven if you've got something small that you're heating or cooking, needs to be measured within the time used. So if you're quantifying the energy use of a refrigerator, you got to do that 24 hours every day for as long as you use it. On the other hand, when I first started at Energy, I was really dumb. I said, we'll use no more of these electric beaters and we'll use no more of these electric blankets, when in point of fact it does make sense to turn the heat down to 60, and if it's really cold, to use your electric blanket. I wish I had brought some of that with me, but you really can pick it up from your local utility. And okay, now, let me, you've got me talking program now, so let me go on. Yeah. Want you to buy them and give them away for Christmas. Yeah. Yeah. You may as well throw it in the oven. Yeah, exactly. All right, now. I want to do some comparisons. The electric knife uses about 0.005% of all the energy you're going to use in your house, even if you're slicing up your turkey. The toaster is almost in the same realm because you use it for such a short period of time. But I wanted to make another point, and I want to sort of tout a program which is only going to work if consumers pay any attention to it. Last year we had this voluntary standard for energy efficiency for the various household appliances which I have mentioned. And in that instance, what the law says is if you are going to represent an energy savings in your advertising, then you must meet the standards that have been articulated by the government. And over a term of 3 years, you must reduce the energy use of, let me see what I can remember, of your TV set by 22% over the next 3 years. And if you're not going to do that, then don't advertise that you have an energy-efficient TV. Well, what's coming out of the National Energy Act is something that the industry is not so comfortable with, but believe me, they can make, are not these voluntary standards that you must tout if you're going to use it in an advertisement, but in point of fact, mandatory energy standards for each of 13 household appliances, such that now by the year 1983, refrigerators must in fact achieve a reduction in energy consumption of, I think it's 49%. Now the industry can do that, and since the bill has been talked about for some 3 years, I mean we've been up three separate times trying to get that piece of legislation, the industry is going to make that. And it also means that in another 2 years, you can force, up to the degree that it's both economically and technically feasible, another increment of energy savings. But that will only work if each of you out there and anybody who's buying those pieces of equipment will then go to the store and make a conscious decision, maybe to buy a more expensive refrigerator, let's use the example, but quantify the life cycle cost of that item, not just the first purchase price, so that you really calculate what it costs to run that piece of equipment, then you will make the decision, hopefully, to buy the piece of equipment that is more energy efficient and at the same time save for the nation a certain degree of a petroleum product or even a natural gas product if it's a water heater you're dealing with. We almost got that far with industry in terms of industrial boilers and refrigerators that are used in industrial processes. We didn't get the bill, and the reason I think we didn't get it is because, you know, as I indicated before, industry is getting there on its own because it's just so expensive to use these inefficient pieces of very large machinery. But none of those signals are going to work unless you respond to them. And it means higher front-end cost, but if you calculate the cost of running the piece of equipment, you'll save money. Anybody else? Yes. Mm-hmm. No, I promise always to indicate when I feel I'm incompetent to answer a question. My friends at the... No, it's the FDA and it's also ELSA. What's your standards? In National Bureau of Standards and also the Consumer Product Safety Commission are all dealing with that issue. The only point I make is that in terms of setting those standards for household appliances, the microwave oven is not yet included, and that's because neither do we have the technical capability to make those decisions, but moreover, we're not satisfied that anybody else has. And so what do I leave you with? I leave you with no advice simply because I don't have the competence to give it to you. Yes. Yeah. Oh, I'm certainly not disputing that. But what I'm saying is it is not a covered product because we're not yet ready to make the judgment call in my brand new department. But that's something that should be included. Yeah. Yes. Yep. You have to. Yeah.
And if prices continue to go up, I don't know what people in my situation are going to do. We think we cannot afford to pay higher prices. We will have to cut down on food and we will have our medical bill will go up.
Mm-hmm.
Which is an addition to my plan.
Anyone
up there keeping that in mind?
Yeah. All right. Somebody is. To a great degree, more than they were 4 years ago when the first pieces of energy legislation were being drafted. two things have been done in what is yet a proposed piece of legislation that Congress will probably take up after the Thanksgiving holiday in conference. Let me see how I want to get at this. First of all, we are going to increase energy prices through what's called a crude equalization tax. And the plan, from at least the Carter administration's point of view, and is not the plan in the view of either the House or the Senate, who've come up with sort of two different views of the world, is that over the next 3 years, the cost of petroleum products, and I'll talk about natural gases separately in a little bit, and not as well because we just got responsible for natural gas about 7 months ago. The cost of petroleum products will increase over three-year increments such that after the end of 3 years, the barrel of petroleum produced in the United States will equate the world price of energy plus an inflationary factor as we know it today, $13.50 a barrel plus whatever the increment for inflation is over the next 3 years. The idea is, and I didn't start in energy really believing this, and I guess I've either been in it too long or I've been brainwashed or maybe I've learned enough, is that if we're running out of the commodity, then there's no point in fooling the public by pricing it so cheaply that we don't value it. But more important, the cost of replacing that very cheap barrel of oil that you can get out of the ground today at this moment is more than it was 4 years ago when we started all this, but will be even greater 3 years from today because we have discovered all of the known, easy, shallow reserves of petroleum, and anything we go after now is going to be much more expensive. And if you want to talk about alternative technologies in terms of taking oil from shale or strip mining, the cost of putting the earth and the environment back in its original position is so great that it demands that cost of energy. Okay, and that's the justification. And honest, I didn't start out believing that. I believe it with all my heart now. I believe it in terms of the economics, and I believe it also in terms of the signal we have to send to the American public. And it's going to hurt. All right, now, talking about what we call the COET, the crude equalization tax, we've done several things. We've allowed the cost of the crude product to increase, but there's a caveat there that says that the price of fuel oil that is used to heat residences shall not be reduced at that rate, but shall remain at a constant level. And that's to take care of not just people on Social Security or who are retired or they're very poor, but to take care of all home householders. Now, some people say that, well, that's sending the wrong signal. If the product is hard to get and it is truly that expensive, why are you going to spare the American homeowner? The obvious answer is because at this moment we cannot afford to absorb it in our household budgets. For natural gas, and I'm talking about the administration's plan, the concept is the same. While the price of natural gas still controlled, and our proposal is to control natural gas even moving through intrastate pipelines, shall be allowed to increase, the price of natural gas going to residences for the purpose of heating homes will be remained at a level as it is today, allowing only an increment for inflation. So that was the protection to the homeowner. The plan for utilities was, as I discussed it earlier, to move to the inverted rate structure so that people who conserve have to pay less per unit per hour. With natural gas assisted or fueled utilities, we did not quite reach that level of accomplishment, and there is no suggestion as to what to do for rates for public utilities who use natural gas to produce electricity. But it's my belief that that'll come next year or the year after with the next energy plan. Now, there's more. I talked about the tax credits for weatherization or tightening up your home with more insulation and storm windows. There are also loan guarantees, which would allow you to borrow money at less than the prime commercial rate through government-assisted mortgage insurance, so that you could buy a new, more energy-efficient furnace to also cut energy costs. Now, for people who are in the low-income bracket or people who are above the age of 60, there are grant programs to provide for, again, the installation of storm windows, storm doors, weather stripping, and also the refurbishing of furnaces so that you don't have to use an old and energy-efficient furnace to heat your home. I think that's it. Oh, no, there's one more thing. Wait a minute. There's one more thing. Coming out of the Community Services Administration bill, which will go up to the Hill after the Christmas recess, is also a repeat of last winter's Crisis Assistance Fund, which actually did provide funds to help the elderly and the poor pay their utility and fuel heating costs from last winter's catastrophe. Now, that is merely a proposal on the Hill and will be discussed and finally voted on sometime after January. You apply for your grants, and this is really weird, either at the Community Services Administration or through State Energy Office. The loans will be within the purview of HUD and can be arranged through their field offices, and believe me, I know a little about their field structure. The tax breaks will come as a result of your filing of your taxes in January. And I hope I haven't left out anything. Did I leave out anything? Oh, and I told you how far we got with the utility rate reform design, which was really not enough. So I leave you with a challenge that we will be in there intervening to ensure that those voluntary standards are considered in rate making. But you're going to have to help us, too. Yeah. Okay. Now, have I left out any? I've probably left out 100 things. Is there any other question? Yes. Oh, yeah. I just really did skim over that.
I was wondering if
you're also studying the solar power satellite. Yes, and I discussed this very early on, actually, before we got started formally. Doing a great deal in terms of studying of some of the, the small scale technology as applied in larger scale, such as satellite systems, but doing something I think is a great deal more important. A lot of the new high and very sophisticated technology has been developed in private industry through government support, through contracts through the Department of Defense. And what we're doing in the area of photovoltaics and mini solar cousin technologies are this year, and again as a part of this dandy bill that's going to come off the Hill sometime before the end of the year, mandating the Department of Defense to put more of its defense expenditures into solar-assisted technologies. The idea is, no, don't laugh, because that's how we got a lot of what we've got today very cheap. The idea is that somebody has to spur the industry, and I don't mean big industry, because solar industry is still very small, has got to support that through contracts, through purchase of whatever is being made today, or the industry will die. So we're doing that on the one side. And the other thing I forgot to say is that we've got some grant money going to states so that states can begin to purchase solar equipment for the use of public buildings. Again, the idea is to shore up the industry long enough to help it grow to maturity so that it can produce cheaply so that all of us can buy it. One more point I should have made on solar is that we're also beginning to develop some standards for both the reliability and, if you will, the safety of solar equipment, because it is such a new industry. We don't want people to go out and have bad experiences and buy solar equipment that's not correct for their home, for their temperate zone. And so the government's putting a great deal of money this year in supporting some of the universities who've already begun to do some quantification of the reliability and the applicability of certain solar-assisted equipment for your house or your particular climatic zone in the nation. And I think that's going to be a very important boost to the solar industry. Is my time up? Yes. Are there any more questions? There's one in the back, and then I'll get you. Yes. Okay, I got you, and I understand your point. During the embargo, as you were, well, I know in Washington, the whole place was black. I live near the southwest complex of federal buildings, HUD, H-E-W, Transition, you know, really gothic and sort of futuristic buildings sort of looming out, up at you out of a very flat land. During the embargo, every light in those buildings was off, and we started a sort of federal energy management program that told every agency, thou must reduce lighting, and they came around and took the lights out so you could hardly see, but we all learned to see, and turn the lights out. And that lasted for the period of the embargo. Now, there's still this strange little program. I come home every night after work, the lights in HUD are blazing, and they have been long gone. Now, the point I want to leave you with, and I know it's sort of a throwing it on to you, I just want to touch on the backhauling industry, the backhauling issue. I have been testifying on the Hill on that backhauling issue for 3 bloody years. We can't get any legislation off the Hill, okay, because there's nobody up there supporting it but a few people from the administration. Now, the point I made, and I made it before, is I can exhort and exhort, but somebody's got to legislate. And the legislators are not going to legislate unless there's that leadership and then somebody to back it up. I firmly believe we have a leadership, and it's not going to take place overnight. This first National Energy Act, however it comes staggering off the Hill, is just the beginning. Now, there are other states that have done a fine job. California, through its Public Utility Commission, will not permit the ornamental use of gas. You can't heat your swimming pool with gas anymore in California. You can't run those lovely little lights like Georgetown outside of your home. That's because, you know, the folks in California decided, as a moral and an economic issue, that that was right to do. The point I leave you all with is that I can deliver the message to you, but then you've got to help me reinforce the message. And I'm really glad we didn't spend an hour talking about my climate and government. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.